Our theme for the weekend together here in Gita Nagari is expanding the flow of Lord Chaitanya's mercy. And I thought a nice way to begin is in order to expand the flow of Lord Chaitanya's mercy, first we have to receive it. We have to have it so that we can expand it. And then further, by empowerment. I'd like to speak on those two topics. A question came yesterday about how to make oneself eligible. What's really important to make ourselves eligible to receive that mercy? And it's an eagerness. In Canto 5, Srimad Bhagavatam, I thought of putting the verse on the board, but I don't even know if we have a board, so we'll just recite the verse. Some of you know the verse, so you can repeat it. Do it a few times, same way as if you were reciting the verse, and see if you can remember the verse. Prabhavastavat abhodha jato. Prabhavastavat abhodha jato. Parabhavastavad abhodha jato. Yavanna jigyasata atma tattvam. Yavat kriyastavat idam manovai. Karmatma kam hina sharira bandha. Parabhavastavad abhodha jato. Yavanna jigyasata atma tattvam. Yavat kriyastavat idam manovai. Karmatma kam yena sharira bandha. One more time. Parabhavastavat abhodha jato. Yavanna jigyasata atma tattvam. Yavat kriyastavat idam manovai. Karmatmakam yena sharira bandha. Rishabhdev, instructing his sons, 100 sons, so that they would be qualified to achieve the goal of life, rule the kingdom that he was ruling, and he could carry on with his spiritual perfection. Translation: as long as one does not inquire about the spiritual values of life, one is defeated. And subjected to miseries arising from ignorance. It's very clear, isn't it? Do it again. As long as one does not inquire about the spiritual values of life, one is defeated. Before you even get started, you're defeated. And subjected to miseries arising from ignorance. Be it sinful or pious, karma has its resultant reactions. If a person is engaged in any kind of karma, his mind is called karmatmaka, colored with fruitive activity. As long as the mind is impure, consciousness is unclear, and as long as one is absorbed in fruitive activity, he has to accept a material body. Confirmed. So, Brahma Jigyasa. The verse is well, Rishabhdev is, he doesn't mess around. He just gets right to the point and says it strongly, and if people don't like it, it's too bad. Very direct. So, absent, in the absence of inquiry into the spiritual values of life, we have material values of life. And where there are material values of life, whatever it is that you're striving to achieve, before you even begin, you're defeated. Krishna says a similar thing in Bhagavad Gita. For those who are faithless, their hopes for happiness, they're defeated before they even start. Their success of life is defeated before they even start. If there's no sense of a higher, now this is not just a materially higher, this is sat. Sat means that which is permanent. The absolute truth. Not like the truth, like, you know, giving a testimony in a courtroom. Your Honor, I swear to tell the truth. He did it. But according to Bhagavad Gita, that's not true. It's not true. Living entity is not the doer. One should never consider oneself to be the cause of action, the cause of the results of action, or that one can be the cause of another person's action, or inducing another person to act. All this is being carried out by material nature. The karma from the karmani, lokasya srijate prabhu. One should never think like that. But not that kind of truth, absolute truth. Truth that's enduring, truth that is, doesn't have a material cause. What is there that doesn't have a material cause? Well, anything that's of this world has, it's the effect of some cause. So what is it that has no material cause? That's something that has spiritual value. So this little section, the heading is placing truth above self, and self in the sense of the conditioned self. So minus the spiritual values, inquiring into the spiritual values of life, one is in this material pool. And in the material pool, whatever it is that you try, you're defeated, because even if you attain it, it's taken away. You're defeated. You've achieved illusion. You achieved a mirage in the desert. What's a mirage in the desert? Well, it's not water. What's happiness in the material world? Well, it's not what real happiness is. It's the attraction of the senses to sense object that ends up in misery. Every time. Mirages and deserts don't produce water, although it may look like water, and water does exist. Mirage is not water. Deserts, by definition, are places without water. Material world, by definition, is a place without happiness. And we want happiness, and what do we get? We get misery. That's what Rishabhdev is teaching. And what is it that's driving that search for material happiness? It's desire. So, fruitive work, whether it's pious or impious, fruitive work. I want to enjoy. Pious or impious? I want to enjoy. I'm at the center. My activity is to fulfill the purpose of my enjoyment. That's why I do it. As long as the mind is of that disposition, as long as the person is of that disposition, the mind is then called karmatmaka, or colored with fruitive intention. When we're colored with fruitive intention, we can't see straight. We see colored. We don't see, in the language of Prahlad Maharaj, pashyati na pashyati. We see what we don't see. When we see illusion, it looks like reality. When we see reality, it looks like illusion. Knowledge in the mode of ignorance is exactly like that. What is to be done is accepted what is not to be done. What is not to be done is accepted as what is to be done. Knowledge in the mode of ignorance. And it brings misery. And one keeps doing it. Very donkey-like. Very foolish. And continuing foolishness. Foolishness perpetuates foolishness. It should be like, hey, you're not happy. It's not working. Happiness is not found in the material world. It's not there. But one keeps going. Birth after birth. And that's the statement. As long as one is absorbed in fruitive activity, he has to accept a material body after material body after material body and more of the same. Absent the inquiry about spiritual values, one is ruled by material desires. Material desires becomes one's master, not the other way around. You're the master of your desires. The desires become your master. Here's Prahlad Maharaj's statement to Lord Nrisingadev in the 7th canto of Bhagavatam. As soon as one has material desires, one loses his spiritual identity. Pretty clear. Do it again. As soon as one has material desires, one loses his spiritual identity. Means not like you stop being a spirit soul, but that conception becomes covered. As soon. And who can say they have no material desire? Anyone want to volunteer? That means we've lost our spiritual identity. Prahlad Maharaj is speaking this in response to Lord Nrisingadev's. In the 9th chapter, at the end of the Prahlad's wonderful prayers, Lord Nrisingadev says, "You please me very much. I want to give you some benediction. Ask for anything you like. Blank check, how much? How many zeros do you want at the end?" Prahlad Maharaj, his reply is, "Please don't tempt me like this. I think it's not nice that you're doing this." "I don't want anything." Previously he asked for, "Please remove from my heart material desire." So, he has no material desire. He said, I'm not the type of devotee that's a businessman. Vanikseva. I'll do this and you give me that. Very good. No. I'm not that kind of person. There's only one thing. I'm your devotee. You're my master. There's nothing else in our relationship but that. I'm your servant. You're my master. That's our relationship. There's no, I want something. material desire. Then he says this, as soon as one has material desires, one loses his spiritual identity. Then all the paraphernalia of one's life, including one's senses, one's body, religion, patience. Interesting that he put that in the list. One's paraphernalia. You know, quality, virtue, patience, and intelligence, and relationships are all deviated from one's original Krishna consciousness. So whatever those things that you have, they become assets to take you down to hell. As long as there's material desire, the real purpose is lost. And instead they become, another example is, a nice turban with a jewel on the top, on the head of a drowning man. What good is that? It'll help him drown more quickly. Better he has no turban and no jewel on his head. Similarly, if we've lost our spiritual identity because we have material desire, better not to have all those things, possessions, paraphernalia, intelligence, patience. I'm going to get my result. I just have to be patient. I'm going to get there to the top of the mountain. I'm going to climb the career ladder and I'll get there. Or whatever it is our thing is, that the material desire that we have. I'll be very patient and figure it out. I'm going to keep going until I get there. As soon as one has material desires, one cannot properly use his senses, intelligence, mind, and so forth for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay, so we got a problem called material desires. So we just like, what do? Go to a doctor and get a lobotomy. Oh good, that's not the solution. What's the solution? The conceptions that we carry of who I am, conceptions of self, commonly it's just a big bundling together of so many karmatmaka or materially colored conceptions. The Bhagavad Gita describes, just as air carries different aromas, so the mind carries different conceptions of the self. What's the mind? Qualitatively, it's, you know, it's like the air. What's the air is colorless, odorless, tasteless, uncontaminated. It's minus all those things. But we see air that's got clouds in it. We see air that has smog in it. Air that smells bad. Air that smells good. But air is without all those things in its natural state. The mind in its natural state is also minus all these material conceptions that we're so accustomed to carrying, but is carried in the mind. In this way, illusion rules, because the mind, it's all upside down. Just like the banyan tree example, where the roots are up and the branches are down. That's upside down. So the senses say to the mind, my dear mind, you see those nice objects over there, something nice to eat or something nice to smell or something nice to touch or something nice to hear or something nice to own. See that, those things? Can you make an arrangement for me to get some of those things so I can enjoy? Oh, yes. I have just the means to do it. Hey, intelligence. Come on over here. Yes, sir, Mr. Mind. What can I do for you? See those objects? The senses want to get those objects. Can you make the arrangement? Oh, yes. I'll take a few more courses. I'll get the degree. I'll know just how to take care of getting those objects for you. Yes, sir. Give me a couple years, I'll get my certificate. And poor soul. Being carried along for the ride and, you know, whoa. It's all upside down. If one doesn't have this inquisitive spirit into the spiritual, meaning eternal, and on the platform of the soul, the values that are of the soul. What is really of value to me? Because everyone has something they value. Largely it's something that's flickering. It may be something that's a little more enduring, like qualities of goodness, like kindness, you know, things that today people call spiritual. Right? You know, somebody does an act of kindness for another person and they're called spiritual. But, you know, the kindness is often on the platform of the body, and so it's actually, it's, although of the quality of the modes of nature, it's better than the others, it's still also, according to Rishabhdev, it's binding the soul to material existence. So what Prahlad Maharaj says to Hiranyakashipu, we just enjoyed experiencing the Sringa Chaturdasi, so I've been immersed in Prahlad Maharaj and Lord Nrisimhadeva. So here's Prahlad Maharaj speaking. My dear Lord, now I have complete experience concerning worldly opulence, mystic power, longevity, and many other material pleasures enjoyed by all living entities, from Lord Rama down to the ant. He's just 5 years old, but he's got it. He's not like figured it out. He's experienced it. You destroy them all as powerful time. Therefore, because of my experience, I do not wish to possess them. My dear Lord, I request you to place me in touch with your pure devotee. And let me serve him as a sincere servant. This is a glimpse into the Absolute. Because he's abandoning the false shelters, the false promises of happiness, the false desires intended to bring happiness that actually bring misery. He's saying, I've seen. It's all temporary and it brings misery in between before it disappears. In this material world, every living entity desires some future happiness, which is true. But the rest of it is that future happiness never happens. It's elusive. It's the mirage in the desert. Which is exactly like a mirage in the desert. Where is water in the desert? Or in other words, where is happiness in the material world? As far as this body, what is its value? It is merely a source of various diseases. The so-called philosophers, scientists, and politicians know this very well, but nonetheless they aspire for some temporary happiness. Happiness is very difficult to obtain. But because they are unable to control their senses, Adanta Govir, they run after the so-called happiness of the material world and never come to the right conclusions. In this way, truth becomes covered. Truth is eternally existing. Krishna is eternally existing. He's the absolute truth. He becomes covered by this illusion, Maya, or the deluding potency of the Supreme Lord. And once we're in that contaminated position, it's very difficult to get out. Because, once again, any conception that we have is colored. Any action that we do is fruitive based. So it's, you know, it's a tar baby. For American born persons, you know what that means. It's when you put your hand on a tar baby, what do? Like this little figure that's made of tar, what do? You put your other hand to try to release the tar, and you get your other hand is stuck. Then you put your foot, you got your foot stuck, and you put your head, you got your head stuck, and you're just stuck. No matter what you do, you get more stuck. That's a tar baby. This is material existence. What to do? Even you try to change your conceptions, it's by colored disposition one gets to another material conception. However mode of goodness it may be, it's still colored. And anything that you do is going to be guided by some material conception. What to do? And you can't do nothing. Krishna rules that out in Bhagavad Gita in the third chapter. The soul is active. You have to do something. You do something, you're entangled. You do nothing, you can't. What to do? What's a nice person supposed to do? It's a dilemma. What to do? One requires mercy. And this is our topic. To receive, to expand the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, one has to receive the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Again, Prahlad Maharaj. He recognizes that this perilous condition, and he knows the solution. Because he's had contact with Narada. He knows that that's the solution. My dear Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, because of my association with material desires, one after another, I was gradually falling into a blind well full of snakes. Remember that one from yesterday? Following the general populace. Not like he's got his own little blind well and everyone else has theirs. Blind wells on sale. Discount price. Pick your snakes at the bottom. But your servant, Narada Muni, kindly accepted me as his disciple and instructed me how to achieve this transcendental position. Therefore, my first duty is to serve him. How could I leave his service? Indicating, you're offering me benedictions. Those benedictions are going to take me away from Narada's service so that I can become the enjoyer of this benediction, that whatever it is. Oh no, I couldn't leave Narada's service. I'm back in that blind well filled with snakes. That's the material condition. The forgetfulness of the spiritual value results in that. No. How could I leave Narada's service? But it's not just I don't want the pit of snakes. I don't want to leave Narada's service. So So we have, the picture is, we have conditioned conceptions of self. And with those conditioned conceptions of self, we have bondage, misery, a elusive happiness that never happens, satisfaction, something we can call happiness, senses, context, sense objects. Ooh, very nice. Why did they say no happiness? That was nice. Happiness of the mode of passion seems to be very nice. In the end, it's like poison. Happiness in the mode of ignorance is poison from the beginning and to the end. Happiness in the mode of goodness, it looks like difficulty, but it becomes very nice. One becomes conditioned by a sense of happiness, by that idea that now I'm above the fray. I'm in this position of happiness. But still, if that is minus the spiritual self and the supreme self with clear conception and this unbroken position of service, it's also temporary. It's also coloring the mind. That's not the solution. Although in this world, it passes for a solution, or at least it's better than the others. But it's not a solution to the problem. Yesterday evening, we had this little presentation on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and the Panchatattva. It's not by accident, it's by design, it's by spiritual intent, that when Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is writing Chaitanya Charitamrita, chapter 2 is who is Lord Chaitanya. What's chapter 1? It's the spiritual master. Because through the mercy of the spiritual master, one comes to know who is Krishna. And not otherwise. So, whole chapter. And big long purports with very deep contemplation on this principle of how to approach the absolute truth. It's through the extension or the expansion of Krishna in the form of Guru Tattva. And there are various categories of guru, not only Diksha Guru, Shiksha Guru, Varna Pradarshaka Guru, those that bring one to Krishna. And then chapter 2 is Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Same, the principle of accessing the truth starts with our inquisitiveness. Without inquisitiveness, even the absolute truth may be standing before you. As with the washerman when Krishna was coming into Mathura, he didn't see the absolute truth. He saw a little boy that was to be punished, chastised at least. Shame on you for asking for the king's clothes. Don't you know? You'll be severely punished. You may not even survive if the king comes to know you are asking for his clothes. Be gone with you. Get out where the get is good. The absolute truth was standing before him, personified. So, for us to go forward, this inquisitiveness is necessary. The wanting to become situated outside of illusion and in reality, in absolute reality, out of darkness and into the light. So we have these Vedic statements. Tamasi ma jyotirgama. Tamasi ma is means not. Go out of the darkness. Jyotir Gama, go to the light. Prabhupada explained that the Back to Godhead magazine heading, or the title of it, was taken from that verse, Back to Godhead, Jyotir Gama. But it includes the other, Tamasi Ma, give up this position of darkness. It doesn't just, spiritual life is not dependent entirely upon our own endeavor, but there must be some endeavor. We're dependent upon mercy, but there's to receive mercy, to get from the darkness to the light, there's some effort required. And that's anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam, or as we have it in Nectar Devotion, there's six standards of surrender from Padma Purana. Surrender to the Personality of Godhead requires these. The first two that are mentioned are accepting things that are favorable for devotional service. Anukulyasya, sankalpa. And things that are unfavorable, you reject them. You don't keep your baggage. I'm carrying on devotional service and I'm keeping my baggage. The other is also there. Pratikulyasya varjanam, you abandon the false shelters. From Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Surya Sama Maya Haya Andhakar Yahai Krishna Tahi Nahi Mayara Adhikar. Krishna is compared to sunshine and Maya is compared to darkness. Whenever there is sunshine, there cannot be darkness. As soon as one takes to Krishna consciousness, the darkness of illusion, the influence of the external energy, will immediately vanish. So, there's the positive and the negative. The positive is take shelter of light, of Krishna's devotees. And the negative is give up the false shelters. And along with giving up false shelters, I think this is going to be amplified in, I know for sure, in Krishna Leela's presentation. There's this, so like one of the retreats that we had here in Giridhanagari, all those persons attending got a little button, the say yes to Krishna button. Remember that? Say yes to Krishna. But when you say yes to Krishna, it means say no to Maya. Oh, I've got to say no to Maya? A little bit. In moderation. So, supposing we had this discussion, because previously to coming here was in Potomac, and we had some discussion last evening I was there on tolerance and forgiveness. You know, following Mahajans, following Prahlad Maharaj, following the Mahajans of our Vedic culture, how do we respond to situations that are challenging? Okay, you know, when we're in our comfort zone, we can be nice. But when it gets challenging, what do? We have to make some hard choices. So here's a statement coming from Srimad Bhagavatam, where when we have a challenging situation, that's where it really tests your mettle, what you're made of, what your real quality is, where your shelter really is. Here's one. The material world is full of embarrassing and irritating situations. True. Unless one is inclined to be very much forgiving, he will be infected by a vindictive mentality which spoils one's spiritual consciousness. So like, it was a hot topic because when we were discussing this, because it came up like four times, five times. Well, what about, aren't there some circumstances that are so provoking? Are you always supposed to be over on this side? Always? You know, some cases it's really difficult, Maharaj. It's like, whoa. So, there are, when we're dealing with adverse circumstances, one may take some strong action, but the strong action should be from a place of service, in the mood of service, not in retaliating because, you know, they irritated me. They insulted me, and they, I did nothing wrong. And I let them know it. It was only fair. Look what they did to me, and so on. The material world is full of embarrassing and irritating situations. Unless one is inclined to be very much forgiving, he will be infected by a vindictive mentality which spoils one's spiritual consciousness. Okay, the topic heading is placing truth above the self, meaning the conditioned self. So the conditioned self says, hey, I was provoked. Look what they did. It wasn't, you know, this is okay, I could, you know, but it was that. And then it was that and that and that and that and that. I just like, and it happens. It goes on. You know, we each have our threshold of where our shelters are. To expand the descending mercy of Lord Chaitanya, one has to receive it. And receive it amply to increase that flow of Lord Chaitanya's mercy. I want to conclude this morning by just giving some examples from Gaura Lila, Lord Chaitanya's wonderful pastimes. One example is Amogha. Amogha was the son-in-law of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was like a super scholar. And in the association of Lord Chaitanya, he became a devotee. And in his devotion for Lord Chaitanya, he wanted to serve him. So he would invite Lord Chaitanya to come to his home to have meals. I'll keep the story brief. Amogha was, well, Sati was his daughter, and Amogha was the son-in-law. So Amogha was envious. And he would sneak in the place where Lord Chaitanya was eating to see how much he was eating. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya knew the mentality of Amogha, so he had the door locked. He had a separate place, and only between his kitchen and where Lord Chaitanya was sitting could anyone enter. But there was another door that he kept locked. So when he, at a moment when he was busy in the kitchen, he didn't watch the door, Amogha snuck in. Aha! Look how much you're eating, you're a sannyasi. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya heard the noise. He came out running with a stick in his hand, ready to bash his son-in-law. And his son-in-law went running. His son-in-law was younger, so he outran Sarvabhauma. And he came back. Sarvabhauma was so upset. He said to his daughter, consider yourself a widow. This person is dead. Consider like that. Finished. Not just, you know, where there's no divorce and no separation and all that. He's dead. Consider yourself a widow. The next day, Amogha came down with a very severe condition of cholera called instant karma. And as his cholera condition got worse and worse, he was nearly on his deathbed. Sarvabhauma said, this is good. He deserves to die for his offending Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya went to him, pleaded with Amoga, you're a Brahmin. How has this contamination come into your heart? Please give it up. Accept the mercy of Krishna. Chant the holy name of Krishna at once. Amoga was in a desperate condition, obviously. He gave up that enmity within his heart. Lord Chaitanya forgave the offense that he had made. His heart became completely cleansed, and he became a great devotee. When Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya heard this, he was upset. Why did you do that? He was an offender. Lord Chaitanya simply laughed and said, because he's your relative. Because of your pure devotion, he's been saved by your mercy, by your spiritual attainment. He's a recipient of Krishna's mercy. Naturally so. Or Gopinath Patanaik is another example. This is taking material shelter. He was one of the sons of Bhavananda Roy, who was a very intimate associate of Lord Chaitanya and of the king, Pratapa Rudra Maharaj. So the king gave Bhavananda Roy the service of collecting taxes, and so much percentage would go to the family and so much would go to the king. And Gopinath was collecting the taxes, but he had more than two pockets. He had the legitimate pocket, the king's pocket, and then he had his own. And the son of the king, Purushottam Jana, knew he's stealing from the king. And not only he's stealing from the king, but he's using it for bad activities. Social, girls, and this kind of thing. Very bad. So he told the king. So, long story. At the end of all of this, Lord Chaitanya refused to directly become involved with, it's the duty of the king to punish the citizen who misuses the king's money and steals from the king. The king has every right. And Gopinath has done wrong. Don't bring this problem to me. You bring this problem to me one more time, I'm leaving Puri. You won't see me again. He didn't want to bring the problem to Lord Chaitanya, but he resolved it by being situated in the heart of the king. The king forgave Gopinath for all the money that he had been embezzling. He gave him a raise. You legitimately take a bigger percentage. It's okay. And here's a silken wrapper. I'll honor you. I give somebody a gold watch and a garland or something. Gopinath was amazed. He was to be put to death by Purushottam Jana, and he was relieved from that and honored. He came and wept at the feet of Lord Chaitanya. He had given up his devious ways and had taken shelter of Lord Chaitanya by that mercy. And Bhavananda Roy, his father, understood the whole thing. Everyone understood the whole thing. Lord Chaitanya, by his causeless mercy, he took away this false shelter of material enjoyment from Gopinath and gave him his two lotus feet instead. And I'll end by narrating one other story, not directly an associate of Lord Chaitanya, but some generations later, of Chanda Roy. I know one person in this room that knows that Chanda Roy story. He became a great devotee of Narottam Das Thakur. Chanda Roy was the son of a Brahmin, a highly qualified Brahmin, and he had a brother named Santosh. But very much like the Ajamila story from the Bhagavatam, Chandra Roy became corrupted by bad association. Bad association will do it. Even a good person can become bad by bad association. So Chandra Roy became influenced by bad association and became progressively bad to worse to terrible. Chandragupta, the person who keeps track of the sins reported to Yamaraj, he's more sinful than Jaghai and Madhai put together. And his brother Santosh is following him. In course of time, because of his terrible sinful activities, he contracted a very serious disease with intense fever. So his father, pious Brahman, he was very, very concerned. So he tried all different remedies with whatever wealth he had. At night he had a dream. He was a Brahman, but he wasn't a Vaishnava Brahman. He was a worshipper of Chandi. And Chandi appeared in his dream and said, "All of your efforts are never going to be of any avail. I am the consort of Lord Shiva. And this kind of circumstance must be addressed by Lord Vishnu. If you want to cure your son, you must become a devotee of Lord Vishnu. And for that to happen, you should approach Narottam Das. He lives in Kachuri. You approach him and plead with him on behalf of your son to accept you as his disciple." Chand Roy's father was not so sure whether to believe this. "This is just a dream. What should I do? I'm a worshipper of Chandi." So he went on. He went to a special physician, expert at driving away fever. Nothing he did was effective. He went to an astrologer. What to do? The astrologer told him the same thing that Chandi said. "Go to Narottam Das Thakur and plead with him to accept you as a disciple along with your sons." So the father wrote a nice letter to Narottam Das Thakur, sent a messenger to deliver the letter. So Narottam Das Thakur is reading the letter from a Brahmin of a nearby village. And he's with his friend Ramchandra Kaviraj. And as he's reading the letter, he asks Ramchandra Kaviraj, "What do you think I should do?" He's pleading for something material. He said, "You're very merciful. Give him your mercy. That's my recommendation." This is some indication from the Lord. So Narottam Das Thakur very intently engaged in chanting of the holy name, and in his mind, in his vision, within his mind, Lord Chaitanya appeared and instructed him the same way. "Bring him here to Kachuri, give your full mercy to him, cure him of his spiritual disease, which will automatically take care of his material disease." So with Ramchandra Kaviraj's confirmation and this vision that he had, he sent the Brahmin back with a message: "Bring the family members here, Santosh, Chandroy, and his father." When they came, they understood they were about to receive some very special mercy. Ramchandra, or Narottam, had them take bath in the sacred river. He came back and he initiated them. And at once, the disease of Chandra Roy disappeared. The family were profusely crying and weeping and falling at his feet. "Please give us training in the ways of worshipping Lord Vishnu, rendering service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead." So he began instructing them in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya and the teachings of Bhagavad Gita and teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam as Lord Chaitanya has taught them. When Chanda Roy went back to his village along with his father and brother Santosh, everyone was amazed. This person that was previously so sinful has now become saintly. So in that village he became very famous, so famous that the local ruler, Muslim ruler, thought this person is dangerous. So he brought him to court on a pretext, found him guilty, and decided to punish him. But the punishment of putting him to death and having him buried, was he ruled that out. It was like the Haridas Thakur Leela. So instead he made a prison cell for him underground with just a little hole and kept him underground in a public place so everyone would know this is what happens if you become like this, this similar viciousness as was done to Haridas, beating him in 22 marketplaces. So, what to do? The father of Chanda Roy, he was told to call him Krishna Das. Lord Chaitanya instructed him, initiate him and call him Krishna Das. So Chanda Roy, now Krishna Das, is in this prison cell, buried underground with just a little, like a straw coming up so he can breathe. He's not suffocating, but nothing to eat. Just like a dungeon underground. So Chanda Roy's father began searching and searching and searching for the means to release his son. Finally he found a mystic. And the mystic says, I know how to do this, but you'll have to give me some bakshish so I can do it nicely. So he, by mystic power, he went underground and told Chanda Roy, there's a tunnel and you can enter the tunnel. You just have to chant this Kali mantra. And Chanda Roy said, there's no way, just like Prahlad Maharaj, there's no way that I can abandon my spiritual master, Narottam Das Thakur. He's given me the chanting of Krishna's holy name. I'm perfectly happy. Please tell my father, I'm okay. I'm just fine. My only regret is I can't actively serve Narottam, that's all. Tell my father it's okay. So the mystic came back up and told his father what Chanda Roy had said, or Krishna Das had said. He was beside himself with anxiety. Meanwhile, the people all heard what happened. This mystic went there and he said, no, I'm just chanting Krishna's holy name. I'm okay. He became even more famous. So the Qazi went to the father and said, why don't you offer me a bribe? I can release him. And he decided, instead, I'll have him executed. So he brought the royal elephant, huge Kuvalyapita-like elephant, and then exhumed Chanda Roy from the prison cell under the ground and brought him before the elephant that was tied, and then he let the elephant loose. And this mad elephant then went charging straight at Chanda Roy, who reached up, grabbed the trunk of the elephant and pulled very hard, and the trunk of the elephant came off. The elephant went running the other direction. And the Qazi said, you know, how did you do this? You're a mystic. And I just prayed to my spiritual master, give me some protection, and I don't know what happened. He became even more famous. The Qazi gave up and accepted him as somehow a saintly person. And then when he went back to his village, being situated in pure devotional service, all the other dacoit buddies that he had, they also became devotees of Narottam Das Thakur. Back to the theme. The plight of material existence, as long as we have material desires, pious or impious, they color our conception and our activities. And that stain doesn't go away, no matter what we try to do, how good we try to become. What's required is descending mercy. And if one is eager to receive that descending mercy can act in a miraculous way. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says it directly in Chaitanya Charitamrita. One who places their faith in Lord Chaitanya, essentially the impossible becomes possible. One who is lame can climb great mountains. One who is dumb can speak great orations. One who is a fool can understand the conclusive truths of the Vedas. What is impossible becomes possible. Impossible is to get out of the material existence once you're involved in material existence. There's no way out. It's not like if you're clever enough, you can find the exit door. There's no way out. It's by design like that. And so if one is eager to receive Lord Chaitanya's mercy through the loving associates of Lord Chaitanya, even if one doesn't know what that is, like the example that I gave yesterday evening, this person in a remote place that had no idea. This was in a country where religion was like forbidden. They had a desire. Krishna sent the means to fulfill that desire. And they accepted it. And they're very advanced devotee now. They understand the difference between illusion and reality. So, in Krishna Leela's workshop, particularly I chose this topic, following, she chose this topic, so I said I would give the philosophical part, and she'll do the practical part through workshops and little exercises of how to place truth above our conditioned sense of what makes me happy, what's important to me, 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 me. Placing this value of sat above asat. Placing the value of Krishna's happiness above our conditioned sense of what happiness is. And staying steadfast on that. You know, at least understanding the path of how to do that. Stay tuned for the later session this afternoon. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki Gaur Pemandi. We'll take a couple of questions and we'll try to... What's the breakfast schedule? Is now, right? Yes? Advaita Chandra? Yes? A couple of questions and we'll break. Yes? Donna Kelly.
Maharaj, you mentioned that the first step in acquiring Lord Chaitanya's mercy is inclusiveness. Yet we see many people who aren't inclusive get Lord Chaitanya's mercy through the sankirtan, which is distributing the holy name books to silence.
Sure.
So I was wondering if you could explain what's happening there if the first step is
Well, they're not contradictory. The way that Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes what you just said is Agyata Sukriti, or there's another term. Forget the other term. It's mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where unknowingly one engages in devotional service, and through the accumulation of unknowing engagement in devotional service, one's merit, spiritual merit, begins to accumulate. So it's receiving causeless mercy even when it's not inquisitive, to the point where one is inquisitive. When an opportunity to take up devotional service, instead of saying no, we say yes. But your point is well taken. That is, before we say yes, there may be a series of no's, but still, by the mercy of a compassionate Vaishnav, unknowingly merit can build up so that no will become a yes. Nilesh.
My mantra
is about what?
Chandrai.
Chandrai, okay.
And if we are in such challenging circumstances, how much emphasis should one give to depending on spiritual master's mercy and doing practical things?
Completely. Any other question? That's the whole message. That's the whole message of that little pastime. Now, our capacity is lesser or greater than in the next person's. But the principle applies, regardless of what our capacity is. How much is whatever our capacity is. Up here, and this will be our last question to the victim. It's ready now?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to keep this good.
This is a very basic question. When you say even pious, is Krishna consciousness pious? What is pious?
There's a distinction between mode of goodness and transcendence. That's the distinction that I'm making. Pious is in the mode of goodness. Shuddha sattva is beyond pious. It's devotional service where there's no connection with the modes of nature. In the quality of goodness, there's a mix, we know from Bhagavad Gita, of passion and ignorance. Invariably, in all circumstances, every pious act or pious thought, in every pious person, there's a mix. And with that mix, there's this karmatmaka. That's the indication of Rishabdev. It implicates one in the material energy and the conception of how I am trying to extend myself towards another person. Intention may be good and the outcome is material, because the conception is with the modes of nature. There's a mix of ignorance and passion. I want something, and the wrong conception of the individual, who they really are, and what is really good for that individual. The transcendental conception, or fully spiritual conception, or the absolute true conception of the individual, is entirely on a spiritual platform. And from that spiritual well-being, the material well-being will follow. So it doesn't mean that a transcendentalist can't be a doctor, or can't be a teacher, or can't be a social worker, or, you know, but their consciousness in pure devotion is, along with this physical well-being, the spiritual well-being is actually foremost. And that's their consciousness. And they have a profession that's addressing this, that, or the other need according to the needs of society. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.